about general stuff, and you're going to want that mic to be real close. And
hi, Curtis.
Hey.
I'm an AZ listener off of Padres Podcast.
Oh, outstanding. I appreciate it. Forgive me, I'm just about to go live here on the show, but I'll look forward to catching up with you later. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. And welcome to yet another episode of Interop Live. We're here on Interop Radio on yet another day of Interop. This is day two of Interop, and it will be the first day of the expo floor opening. That happens at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and it should be a very, very exciting time. Now, it's already been something of an exciting time here because we've been getting ready, and I have someone with me in the studio this morning in our first segment who knows all about what's been going on. Mark Sullivan is Director of Network and Infrastructure Operations for Informatic Group, and he is, kind of the assistant head cat herder here in the Network Operations Center at Interop. Mark, welcome to Interop Radio.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Now, it seems like I was talking to Glenn Evans, who is the chief cat herder here at the Interop Net, and yesterday it seemed like things had been going pretty darn smoothly in all. I mean, we've been here since Wednesday night or Thursday morning of last week. How would you describe the entire process of setting up and getting ready? Has it been a fairly smooth one or full of adventure?
I would say this one's gone pretty well. The last couple of years, we've really gone through a refinement process within the setup of the InteropNet. One of the fundamental things that we've changed to help kind of simplify the setup has been we actually reduced the number of people that come in on day one. And part of the reason that we did that was because what we found is when you had 20 people converge on you and not enough things to give them to do, it kind of got challenging. We spent a lot of, hurry up and wait time. So, from that point, and I'm happy to talk about any of that, but we find that that's made the setup much, much simpler. And we think that things have gone really, really smooth so far this year.
Well, it does seem like in a lot of ways the human piece, the personnel management and tying all that together is more complex than the technology side. Is that just me looking at it from a particular vantage point, or is that pretty accurate?
Well, I think all in all, I mean, humans are complex, and unfortunately we come here, I've written a small paper called, A Tribe of Alpha Males. So, and unfortunately that's what we all are. We, to a certain degree all have, varying degrees of ego, and, trying to manage some of that in this kind of environment can be a little bit challenging sometimes. People have strong opinions. One of the things that I really like about the InteropNet is that we manage to transcend that most of the time, and as a result of that, we're able to actually kind of sit down and solve problems collectively, collaboratively, despite the fact that we all may have strong opinions about certain things. But there's a mixture between human and technology challenges, of course.
Now, I do want to remind our listeners that even though Mark said, and it's largely correct that this is a group of alpha males, there are some women on the InteropNet team. As a matter of fact, our wireless has been put together by a very competent woman, Heather Williams from Ruckus. But I think that the alpha tag applies to the women on the crew as well.
Absolutely, it does. And I certainly apologize to anybody that was out there if I misconstrued that. That's certainly true. Everybody comes in and contributes equally.
Now, you were talking about staging people in. In a lot of ways, we also stage the network as it goes out because, for example, yesterday was when the conference started. today, this afternoon, we'll have the expo floor open. And then going out, the expo floor will close Thursday afternoon while the conference continues through Friday. Does that process also make it a little bit easier where you can stage the demand going up?
It certainly does. It actually does two things. In some ways, it makes things, you know, much easier because, you know, we can, you know, schedule our time in terms of where we're going to focus our efforts and energies. But at the same time, in a way, it actually adds some degree of complication because, you know, when we go to turn off the exhibition hall, we have to make sure that we're very careful not to turn off the education area. And these are the challenges. So we'll actually have somebody sitting in the NOC ensuring that everything continues to operate for those that are sitting in the classrooms during interop during that day, that that transition day between expo only and the show in the classroom.
Let me get a picture, if I can, of the relative sizes. I know that there is wireless connectivity that covers the entire conference area and the expo floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then for many of the booths here on the expo floor, there's also cabled connection. And I suppose there are cabled connections in some of the conference rooms as well. But when you compare sort of the size or the scale of the two infrastructures, cabled and wireless, how do they compare?
So that's a really interesting question. And one of the things that we've done over the years, that mix, as you can imagine, over the last 10 years has shifted significantly, whereas 10 years ago we might have supported maybe 10% of our user base on the wireless network and 90% on the wired network. We've almost seen a flip of that. We're probably seeing about 80% of our traffic come over the wireless network today and only 20% of coming across the wired network.
That is fascinating. Aside from the just general improvement in the wireless technology over the lifetime of this show,
yeah,
do you think that there are other reasons for fewer people demanding the cabled connections?
Well, for us and working with our customers, which are, you know, the people that attend the show, as well as, you know, show management and supporting their needs, what we have managed to do over the years is no longer, you know, it used to be, you know, hey, we can do wireless in certain areas because if we lose a little bit of connectivity, it's not such a big deal. If somebody drops a few bits on a YouTube stream, not a problem. But we really have to have wired in the classrooms has always been kind of the fundamental decision, because we wanted to make sure that that's rock solid. One of the things that we've done over the last probably 3 or 4 years is kind of really gotten good at delivering wireless in just the classroom, so both to the attendees as well as the presenters. And this has saved us a ton of time in terms of deployment. One of the things that I hope most people don't realize is sometimes we do what's called room turns at the end of the evening for the classroom areas. When you have wired connections and they change the configuration of the rooms, you've got to move that wired. When it's wireless, not a problem. Go move your stuff. We don't have to get involved.
Well, now, I do know one thing. Every year for Interop, there is an RFP that goes out, and different companies will respond to that RFP. And so there is an extent to which we have a constantly shifting cast of characters among the vendors that supply hardware, software, and services that make up the Interop net. And that's certainly been true in the wireless space, because we had for a number of years a particular vendor, and we've for a variety of reasons had a new vendor come in and be the wireless provider. It seems that one of the consequences of that is that the sheer number of physical drops to the access points has changed, because the previous provider used a configuration where they had a bunch of radios in one access point.
Sure.
Has the number of access points and the increase in that number made things more complicated or just different?
I would have to say just different. And as the convergence of a number of things, one of the things that we frequently joke about is that you'd be amazed how much wire you have to run in order to run wireless. But this is really going to be true in pretty much any enterprise. In terms of the current vendor that's in here, well, they're certainly is more wire that we have to run to the access points. You know, in our experience, we've gotten really much more efficient at actually getting those deployed. Unfortunately or fortunately, we've become very, very familiar with this facility. And as a result of that, you know, just knowing where things are, you know, a lot of the deployments that we can do is, you know, while we have, you know, documentation, of course, we just walk into the environment and kind of know where things are at, and that saves us quite a bit of time.
Well, Mark, I know that for a long time you were in charge of the help desk here at the Network Operations Center, and I have to ask, we've got the expo floor going live at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Would you expect for the people on the help desk that they're going to have a spike in their demand, say, starting at about 1 o'clock and leading up, peaking somewhere between 3 and 4? And I see you looking at the side, over to the side. I assume that there are some messages coming in from our NOC team members.
No, actually, there was just a bit of an alarm I needed to shut off there. So anyway, so generally what we see is the day before we go live, we get a lot of tickets. A lot of the vendors are showing up. They're needing some assistance, you know, with their booths, making sure that everything's up and operational. They can pass, you know, plenty of traffic clean to the internet. Then we'll see, first thing in the morning, like today was actually reasonably quiet. We kind of expect somewhere, if the show is opening at 2 p.m. today, we kind of expect that we're going to see a spike coming in probably around noon. Those last minute, participants that come in and need to get things set up, maybe, you know, didn't fully set up their environment and just need a little bit of assistance. We're prepared for that. We have staff that's on hand ready to go out, deploy, provide assistance.
Outstanding. I'm sitting here having my own little wrestling match with our provider for the radio program. It has decided to be entertaining for us. One of the things that I'm awfully curious about, though, is how our interop team members, what we call the ITMs, how is that working for us this year? How is our current crop of ITMs doing?
Our ITMs are fantastic this year, as they are, you know, pretty much every year. One of the things that I like is we always kind of have a mix of, you know, seasoned ITMs as well as, you know, some fresh participants, and we usually try to kind of mix that up so that, you know, we're bringing in new ideas. We don't want the process to become, you know, kind of like a, you know, a snake eating in on itself, if you will. You know, we want new ideas. We especially like, we actually have one ITM here who has done a number of other events, and one of the things that we really like to do is kind of compare notes, because nobody has the answers to everything that's going on in an environment. One of our participants actually does the network for Burning Man, so we find that interesting to compare what happens in that unique environment compared to this unique environment.
That really does have to be a unique environment in the most extreme definition of that word.
Very definitely.
Well, looking forward, are there lessons that we're already learning this year that you can imagine applying to next year's experience at Interop?
So the one thing that I really like about Interop is, actually, if you look back to its, you know, 26, 27-year history, you can kind of see everything that we're doing today as a culmination of a lot of really great ideas that have just developed over the years. So certainly every year we're learning just a little bit. You know, we're learning a few new tricks, and we, of course, carry those into the next show. I mean, part of what we do is just a continuous process of refinement in terms of, you know, taking the show forward. Certainly, we have lessons learned, things that we kind of look and say to ourselves, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have done it that way. We'll do it differently the following year. Also, of course, that changes with the vendor mix that's in the environment, too.
Right, and that's always an entertaining part, I know, of the year when we start getting the responses to those RFPs back and figure out who the players are going to be.
Certainly, certainly.
Well, Mark, thank you so very much for being with us. I know this is a busy day for you, and I appreciate you taking the time out to be with us today.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Kurt.
Thank you. That was Mark Sullivan, Director of Network and Infrastructure Operations for Informatic Group, and the Assistant Chief Cat Herder here at InteropNet and the Interop Network Operations Center. Well, we'll be back with you in just about 15 seconds, so stick around. Interop Radio will continue. Back here at Interop Radio, live from the Network Operations Center on what will be, in just a few hours, the expo floor here at Interop. We're watching the last of the crates being taken out. You might have heard a couple of forklifts going by. If you've been with us the last few episodes, you know that we've sort of had peaks and valleys in the number of pieces of equipment moving past us at any given time. We've had sort of forklift heavy days, forklift light days, and well, we're just a couple of hours from there being no more forklifts until Thursday after the show floor closes. It's interesting watching all of the booths come together. This is the time when what we tend to see are the Teamsters and the set construction people moving out. You know, all the stagehands are packing up their gear and moving out. And the booth staff, the people who work for the companies who have rented the space, are moving in. They're unpacking their exhibits. They're unpacking all of the things that they will hand out to attendees. In some cases, you can see the staff of a booth having a meeting about, you know, the particular pitch they're going to be using, the kind of technology they're going to use in order to grab the attendee information. And it's an interesting time. I've been doing this for a very, very long time, and it's never really gets old, which is one of the things that kind of keeps it fun. Now, as we move into our second segment, we have another special guest here on Interop Radio, and want to make sure that you know who this is. This is Chris Croteau from Curvature. Chris, welcome to Interop Radio.
It's good to be here.
Chris, I want to ask you to move the microphone just a little bit closer to you. We have these microphones designed to keep out the forklifts and make sure that we're hearing nothing but goodness from our guests. So thanks very much. Now, Chris, we've spoken with Curvature before on Interop Radio. We spoke with you from the Hot Stage warehouse, and it was great getting a picture of what Curvature is doing. How have things been going from the Curvature standpoint so far in the run-up to the show floor opening here at Interop?
For the most part, it's been going really smoothly. We had a little bit of excitement this morning. But aside from that, this has been a very smooth, very easily deployed show for us.
That's outstanding. Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that excitement this morning, because while it's important to know that from the attendee standpoint right now and going forward, as far as we know, the attendees are going to have nothing but a superb, smooth, seamless networking experience, whether through wired or wireless. This morning, kind of at the tail end of the crew breakfast, there was some excitement. And I, from what I know, that it came, notice of that came first from our wireless person saying, "Hey, I've lost all my access points that aren't on the show floor. What was going on?"
Well, what ended up happening was the switches were used to aggregate all of the wireless access points and the conference centers off the show floor, decided to actually become dual active. We have them in a as one logical, one virtual chassis, but something happened, and we're still doing a root cause analysis on it, but everything, once again, is stable here. But what ended up happening was both chassis, they lost contact with each other, and each one of them, thanks to some safety measures to keep them from becoming both active and forwarding, kept on trying to give the mastership to the other switch. So one switch would give the mastership to the other switch would see it, give it back. So after some quick thinking and quick troubleshooting, we were able to resolve that and get everything up and running within a matter of minutes.
It did seem to resolve itself very quickly. And can I ask you to walk me through a little bit of the troubleshooting process? I mean, obviously the first piece of warning was that, hey, the access points are gone. What kind of steps did you go through to try and figure out what was going on? Can you help us at all with what was going on in the minds of the team members as they tried to troubleshoot this thing?
Right. And first step is obviously make sure that we haven't had a catastrophic failure. Make sure that all the equipment is still there, up and running. Next quick check is physical layer. Obviously start from the bottom of the OSI model, work your way up. After verifying physical layer was good, then we started diving into switch logs. And what we saw there was all the devices that had connections to both of the switches in this virtual chassis, the links were flapping. We would see the link go up, go down, go up, go down. But the devices that we have a small number of devices that are connected to only one switch in this pair, all those devices stayed up through all of this. So quick thinking, put two and two together, realizing what was going on. And the quickest way to resolve one of these scenario like this, reboot the switches.
Yeah, it is amazing to me after many, many years of being in the business how many problems are solved by essentially turn it off and turn it on again. It doesn't matter whether you're dealing with a toaster or a high-tech switch sitting out in the middle of a complicated network. That's one of those constants when you're dealing with anything involving electricity, I think.
Agreed. It's just the nature of technology and nature of our business. Sometimes it's all it takes.
Well, you know, I'd like to dive in for a couple of minutes on something because you mentioned that as they are set up, you have a couple of chassis that are set up as a virtual single chassis, if that's a proper understanding of what's going on.
That's correct.
Why was that done rather than setting it up as having two separate chassis from the beginning? What was the thinking? Why have the one virtual chassis rather than each system be its own thing?
Well, one of the biggest advantages of the virtual chassis is that it reduces complexity in the network design. In a classic network scenario where you have your access switches dual homed to an aggregation layer or to the core, you configure them independently, they're managed independently, and then as the networking knows about the spanning tree protocol. And spanning tree protocol will keep one of the links down so as to avoid a switching loop. But the consequence of leaving that interface down, and that there's always, in the case of a device failure, there is a noticeable time for that link to come back. Whereas when we put a switch in a virtual chassis, yes, true, spanning tree does run between the access switch and the virtual chassis, but since it's one link from the perspective of the control plane, there is no delay in case I have a link failure. If I lose a fiber or lose a transceiver, the only thing that's lost is data in flight across that link. Anything else continues normally.
All right. That sounds like an ideal situation where anytime you can apply continues normally to most of the network, that sounds like a win in pretty much every direction.
Exactly. That's why we went with it.
Well, I would love to have you back on later when you do figure out what happened to cause this, because, as I say, we've talked about the fact that Interop is at its heart about learning and about education. We've done stories about the ITMs, the InteropNet team members and the classes that they've been getting from the various vendors and the experts who are team leads. We've talked about the conference here at Interop, which is all about education. And it seems like this is a great opportunity for education that comes from the real-world deployment of what is, in fact, a fairly complicated network to set up in short order.
Exactly. There's no better way to gain knowledge than experience, and no better way to really push equipment than to put it into production and see what happens.
Outstanding. Well, Chris, I very much appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
That's good to be here.
That was Chris Croteau of Curvature, who is here talking about some excitement we had this morning and what the team did to make it somewhat less exciting. Well, Interop Radio will be back to you in just a moment to finish things up. I will return. Please don't go anywhere. Be right back. To do it. Thank you, sir. And we're back here for the tail end of this episode of Interop Radio, Interop Live. Now, this is kind of the calm before the storm. As I mentioned, while we've heard a couple of forklifts go by, in general, the big heavy equipment is off back at the warehouse. We're seeing the booth staffs get ready. And when we come to you next, the show floor will be open, and instead of heavy equipment, we'll be dealing with the sound of hundreds and hundreds of attendees out here on the expo floor. Well, we hope that you will be with us for that episode. That comes to you live today at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back with you, of course, again tomorrow. That's Wednesday, 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Pacific. Then Thursday, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific. Please plan to be with us for all of those. If you are listening to us via streaming or on iTunes, thank you very much. But if you get a chance, come by, listen to us live, and join in the chat. We'd love to have your voice in the conversation. Well, until 4 o'clock this afternoon, Pacific time, I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, saying thanks so much. Hey, enjoy Interop. We'll see you in just a while.